sir, the possibility of successfully navigating an asteroid field is approximately 3,720 to 1.
Never tell me the odds.
I'm Pete Mitchell. He's Peyton Jones. And this is the Church Planner Podcast.
Welcome back to the Church Planner Podcast. Peyton Jones here, and I have got a special guest today, a friend, Winfield Bevins, author, artist, and founder of Creo Arts, which is a nonprofit dedicated to bringing beauty, goodness, and truth to the world through arts. He serves as artist in residence at Asbury Theological Seminary and is the author of Liturgical Mission, Ever Ancient, Ever New, and Marks of a Movement. All three phenomenal books. Definitely, you need to check those out. Marks of Movement may be the greatest book I've ever read on John Wesley, but his work equips churches and creators to embody the gospel through imagination and craft. But today, we're going to be talking about his newest book, which ties into what he does at Creo Arts, which combines evangelism and the arts together. The name of the book is How Beauty Will Save the World, and I can't wait to dig into this. Winfield, good to see you, man.
Hey, Peyton, it's good to be with you. Excited to kind of reconnect and talk about beauty, art, mission, evangelism, wherever the conversation goes.
Well, man, you were at Asbury Theological Seminary. You were doing a ton of stuff on church planning, which for all of our audience here, Winfield knows. And we would call him normally Dr. Bevins, but now he's an artist and he's super cool. And so here's the deal, guys. I'm a huge fan of Winfield's work, his writing, his thinking. But now that he's doing Creo Arts, it's like he's living the dream. He slipped away and just went into doing the stuff that made his heart come alive. So, Winfield, kind of walk us through a little bit of that. How did that happen? And tell us about what Creo Arts does.
Yeah, it's wow. So part of this goes back to my own redemptive story of how I came to faith. I got mixed up as a teenager, got kicked out of school, high school, and went to an alternative school. And an art teacher taught me how to paint. And she was a professor at the University of Tennessee and volunteered at this alternative school. And it was art. It was beauty. Mm-hmm. That pointed me to the transcendence and the beauty of the gospel, and had a conversion experience at 19. Fast forward, got involved with church planning. 2005, planted a church in the Outer Banks, North Carolina, which you probably know about, a surfer church. Like, and there was an alternative school there. And this is kind of what people don't realize about my story is, like, I went and met with this principal and said, hey, I used to be one of these kids. If you ever need a motivational speaker, you know, and he said, mm-hmm. You know what? We don't need a speaker. We need an art program. What if I gave you a classroom and you work with our kids? So this was the only school in the public school system that didn't have funding for an art program. So, man, we built this art program, got volunteer of the year. Long story short, a local donor called me up and said, man, this is amazing. I own a beach storefront that I've always dreamt of it being a gallery. What if I gave it to you? So literally, as we were planting this church, man, we opened an art gallery, and that's how we grew our church. And God just used this whole convergence of art, community, mission, evangelism, just kind of all intersected through this art space. So fast forward, got recruited, went to Asbury, was over this global church planning initiatives where we connected, worked with church planning leaders all around the world, was there for 10 years. So a couple years ago, man, I was on a Zoom call and there was a guy from Singapore who said he had a word for me. He said, man, are you an artist? And I said, I am an artist. He said, I feel like the Lord wants me to tell you to start the Art Guild, gather and empower the artists.
Mm.
Dude, I just started weeping. I was like, what in the world? And all these things kind of started happening. God began to give me a vision for Creo Arts to gather, support, encourage artists and communities across a nation and around the world, but also to bridge and build bridges to equip the church, artists, patrons, and churches to be missionaries of beauty and to kind of fuel a movement, if you will. So a couple things happen. One, we apply for a nonprofit status. Two, this was December 2022. Well, if you were in the news, a major revival happened at Asbury University in February of 2023. We literally got our IRS letter of approval during the first week of the Asbury revival. So what would you do, man? I took that letter and I drove up to Asbury and I threw it on the altar and I said, Lord, Creo Arts is yours. Would you bless this thing? And dude, it has been miracles. So last 3 years of my life, we just literally fast forward 3 years later, we're working in 20 states, artists, churches all across the nation. We're supporting projects. We've helped give birth to film, theater. Like, it's just amazing. And I'm kind of living the dream. I mean, honestly, I say
that you are.
It's kind of like at this season of life, I feel like there's this holy convergence where God's just allowing me to do all the stuff he's equipped me to do in and through the arts. Yeah.
Well, I think that our listeners have probably picked up on it already. You have a mission heart. And the book, really talks about the missionaries of beauty. And what did you mean by that in the book? Can you define that for our listeners a bit? Missionaries of beauty.
Yeah, it's kind of like, we think of ministry mission as like apostles, prophets, evangelists, teachers. Oftentimes we think of these kind of static categories. But what you see is the very first person to be mentioned to be filled with the Spirit in the Bible was Bezalel in the temple, who was a craftsman and an artist that God anointed and called and empowered by the Holy Spirit to create works of beauty, to prepare people's hearts and minds for the glory, to receive the glory of God in worship. And so you see, artists actually have a role that has been misplaced throughout the history of the church. There's historiography behind this. But this idea of missionaries of beauty isn't just for the artists. I believe one of the sub-themes of the book is whether you're an artist, whether you're a pastor, whether you're a patron, whether you're a doctor, whether you're a stay-at-home mom, I believe we're all called to bring beauty to the world and to make our lives a work of art. And so in essence, I see missionaries of beauty as actually giving a category for artists, craftsmen, musicians. And so when I speak of the arts, I'm speaking broadly speaking, people who are makers, who are co-creating with God the Father, works of art that inspire and bring beauty, goodness, and truth to the world.
That's so good. That's so good. So one of the things I've noticed about your books is that they're slightly ahead of the curve. I don't know if you've ever kind of felt that, but Liturgical Mission, Ever Ancient, Ever New, that was ahead of this social media curve, where people have kind of started returning to something more substantive, something more ancient. But also marks of a movement, actually, prior to the disciple-making renewal that we've seen. And it definitely had a profound impact on me, that book. Just personally, I mean, I picked it up because I was writing Plantology and had seen it as a free download and checked it out and was like, this book is incredible. Like, it actually reconnected me to Wesley. I kind of have this idea that when you write a book, it's kind of, there is a prophetic element to it. So I guess what I'm trying to say, because I was about to ask the question, is this book just for artists? But I feel like it's too easy of a question. I think I'm going to reframe my question to, how is this book kind of prophetic for the time that we live in right now?
Yeah, no, it's good. I write out of experience and out of where I sense the Lord's leading me and what God is doing. And I believe we're in the midst of a movement. And I think it's all interconnected. God is a God of order, and God is a God of the times and the seasons. And I think the liturgical mission and some of the, you know, marks of a movement, this is kind of, those books were pointing people toward the recovery of what has been lost. I think we are in the midst of a movement where, and it's all interconnected. It's beauty, transcendence, the arts, in the same way as liturgy and tradition have been lost to most kind of Protestant evangelicals, or, you know, those in kind of the, maybe the missional movement, the recovery of the arts also have been something that has been lost throughout the decades. And God is raising up artists as missionaries to the culture. And I think art and beauty is like the new apologetic. It's like the new evangelism. It doesn't supplant the word. It doesn't take the place of, but it prepares people's hearts and minds and their imaginations to receive the beauty of the gospel. Mm. And so I think it is prophetic in the sense that the Lord is raising up. And this is the amazing thing, is like, it's a for such a time as this moment. Whereas when God called me to do this thing, man, what I'm seeing is it's happening everywhere. Mm-hmm. There are artists, there are churches, there are thinkers that are, God's fueling their hearts and their passion and their imagination to embrace the power of the art, the redemptive power of the arts.
Good.
In local communities across the nation, and it's across the denominations, it's across the traditions. That's what's exciting for me, is like, there are brothers and sisters all around the world that, you know, we've been connecting with, that God's saying the same thing. There's that same calling, and it's expressed differently, but there's that same heart. One, to glorify God through the arts, to give glory, honor, to create art that inspires, that brings beauty and hope and healing. And man, what do we need more than anything right now? We're so divided. The church is so messed up, man. Why not beauty? We've tried everything to reach the culture. We've tried apologetics. We've tried arguments. We've tried politics. Why not beauty? And I think
so good.
I could just keep going. I'll pause there. That probably maybe is another question.
It does, because you know, when you go to somewhere where you're, let's say, celebrating the arts, like in a concert. Right. You go to a band that you love. You don't think about anything else in that setting. You don't think about people's religious beliefs, political affiliation. All you think about is, we are all here because we love this art. Right. Yep. And it does unite. Like, I'm a huge Deftones fan. That is my favorite band to this day. Has been for like 20 something years. I'm boring. But there's a camaraderie. They'll fill a stadium, and there's a camaraderie amongst. But it kind of leads into my question. We're so used in this divided world to leading out with arguments and ideas. Why and how should church planners and leaders think about leading out with beauty instead? Some people think Paul just worked with his hands, and he did, but he also raised funds. Don't believe me? Check out Philippians 4, 1 Corinthians 10, and Romans 15. In fact, when the kingdom of God catapulted forward, there was usually a kingdom-minded businessman or woman behind it, like Priscilla and Aquila. If you're going to raise funds, though, do it well. Our partners, Reliant, can help you put rocket fuel in your fundraising tank. I wish I'd had this when I was church planning. But Reliant can partner with you to get you the training and coaching you need to raise that support, as well as provide you with employment services you may need, like payroll, health benefits, and more. To learn more, check out Reliant.org/CPP.
Yeah, again, we've led with everything but beauty. And it's kind of like the church is still in decline. Like, all these movements, I'm not going to name, like, the conferences and all the stuff. We've done, we beat all these drums, the church, you know, the church growth. First, there was the church growth movement. Yeah. And one of the things I talked about in Ever Ancient, Ever, or Marks of a Movement, was church growth theory, there was all this focus on let's grow the church, let's expand and multiply the church, while at the same time, there's a correspondence with the rapid decline of the church.
Mm-hmm.
And there's all this move and talk about evangelism and discipleship, but the statistics, there's still no shift. So my thing is, what if we tried to reach people's imaginations and their hearts as the key to open them to the power of the gospel? So I say this not in theory, but as someone who my own life, my own testimony, my own conversion story, God used an art teacher. He didn't use a, you know, some flashy TV evangelist or somebody with a big following. He used a humble lady who, you know, taught me how to paint. And man, that was the thing. That was the key to the heart that the Lord used to prepare me, the soil of my heart. You know, our imaginations are like the soil. And I think the imagination is the connection between the head and the heart. Mm-hmm. So Pentecostals, charismatics often go for the, you know, the heart.
Yeah.
You know, oftentimes kind of your more heavy reform or theological traditions go after the head.
Right.
The imagination engages a part of our being in which God created us as holistic beings. And I think, again, this goes back to the beauty of liturgy and tradition. It's formative because there's rhythms and there's patterns. And there, it's an embodiment that's oftentimes missing in some of these other kind of expressions of Christianity.
Wow.
Honestly, that's really what's missing in most Protestant evangelical or charismatic circles.
Wow. That's powerful. Well, I know you wrote this book to equip churches. A church planner hearing this today who thinks, all right, I'll pick up the book. The book, again, is called How Beauty Will Save the World. They pick it up and then they're thinking to themselves, all right, how's this going to equip my church to lead out with beauty?
Yeah, it's, you know, the book isn't, hopefully it'll root and ground artists, you know, in the faith, but the book really is the kind of book artists would give to their pastors or church leaders to say, okay, the same question you just asked. You know, and I actually kind of have a framework for this. I call it steeples and studios. Like, you know, oftentimes those are two polar words, you know, we don't kind of put together. And it's really, one is it's equipping, and I could see churches using this as a study, taking church groups through this to say, okay, how do we do this, right? This sounds good in theory, but like, come on, give me some real examples. And the book is full of stories, which I've done in, you know, as you know, in, you know, my previous books, I just tell stories. So I do theology, you know, I'm an interesting mix of kind of practical theologian, artist, author, you know, and I weave these stories together in a way that, like, it's rooted in, you know, biblical theology, but there's a praxis aspect to it. So I'm going to put my preacher hat on, Peyton, real quick for the, you know, the church planners or pastors listening, that, like, here's my 3-point outline. Like, how do we do this? Right. One is guilds, galleries, and gatherings. So think in terms like churches. Can't, you know, oftentimes churches have buildings or storefronts or where they meet. And, you know, think of the tens of thousands of church buildings that are sitting empty in North America. Like, it's a wasted use of God's, you know, economic, like, we need to use our buildings. And so one is helping leaders think through how they can disciple and gather artists through guild gatherings, which are small gatherings that encourage the formation of community where art and faith can flourish. So gatherings of artists, and, you know, this is in the book. Two is galleries, which is, think of all the empty walls. Think of all the churches that you walk down and it looks like a prison or it looks like Walmart on the inside. You know, it's just these big white walls. Like, so this is my home studio. Like, one of the things we teach churches is like how to install, and it doesn't even cost a lot of money, like track lighting, you know, hanging system to hang rotating art shows, you know, to be able to actually curate and show works of art in your church building or wherever you meet. And the third thing is gatherings, which is like, you know, helping churches think through how they can host multi-worship art events that are multi-sensory, that engage through music, songwriting, poetry, visual arts. You can engage all the arts, but also gatherings in the sense of like hosting art events that invite the community to come in. You know, art is like a meal. It's kind of like inviting someone around your table. And art creates conversations. It creates collaboration, and ultimately it builds community. It invites people around a big table. It allows people to ask questions and interact. So those are real quick snapshots. Guilds, love gatherings, and galleries are three kind of real tangible ways. The book unpacks that. You know, we can, you know, go more in depth, but just for the sake of pointing people to it as a resource, the book hopefully will equip church leaders to think through how they can actually embrace the power of the arts wherever they are.
So good. And you know, it is funny when you say this, that I'm always thinking innovatively. I'm currently church planning now, and I'm always thinking about how to do it a little bit outside of the box. And I have to confess, I myself am an artist, but I do not ever think about artistic endeavors as being a part of it. So again, I just really, I always feel like your books kind of have a prophetic mark to them. And it is just ironic to me that we don't naturally go there. It just involves so much of a participatory, you know, it's funny, you and I both know Ralph Moore, right? Who's probably the most active disciple maker I've ever met in the West. And he still actively does that, but he and his wife, Ruby, they are doing, you know, all kinds of art. Like now that they're retired, that is their joy and their thing. And I can't wait for him to hear this because he's part of our team now. I cannot wait for him to hear this because I know he's going to see the connection, but it doesn't naturally give itself to us. That's what I'm confessing. So again, the book is How Beauty Will Save the World, a much needed book to open maybe and shed some light on this area for us where for some reason we're missing a step on it. And yet as Winfield unpacks it in the book, it is so biblical. Bezalel, is that how you pronounce it? The temple artisan. I had never made that connection before. So, Winfield, before we wrap up here, anything else that you would like to leave our readers with today?
Yeah, I mean, I think I would say whether you're an artist or not, God is to be created in the Imago Dei is not just to the ability to make moral decision. It's the ability to be a co-creator. God is a creator. God is the great artist of the universe. And what we're talking about is recovering what God created us to do and to think creatively, innovatively as leaders. And so I'm on a mission, one, to support artists, but also to help leaders think like artists, to recover that side of our brain to, I think, to do effectively mission, church planning, evangelism, all that stuff in the current moment we find ourselves in. We don't need more strategic thinking. We don't need more programs. We don't need more how-to. We need to equip people and release the body of Christ to think like artists, to be artists, because God created us, every one of us, regardless of what our vocation is, to live out our life in an artistic, artesian kind of way. So that would be my encouragement is whoever you are, wherever you, whatever your vocation is, whatever type of church you're leading or planting, whether you're a planter, pastor, you know, I want to encourage you to get the book, interact with it. You can find out more about kind of the ministry of what we're doing, creoarts.org. I'm also an artist. It'd be fun if you're interested in checking out my art. You know, I post stuff on Instagram, Facebook. But yeah, if you have questions, reach out. I'd love to interact, hear your story, and, you know, encourage, you know, the work that, you know, church leaders are doing locally. I think that's really a passion.
Mm-hmm. What's the website for Creo Arts?
It's creoarts.org.
creoarts.org. All right. Again, guys, the book is How Beauty Will Save the World. My guest has been Winfield Bevins. Winfield, thanks so much for coming on.
Absolutely. Thanks so much for having me, Peyton. Great to reconnect with you, man. Appreciate all you're doing.
Always good. Guys, before you go, just something that occurred to me that Winfield brings out, beauty instead of arguments. It is important to know that C.S. Lewis, towards the end of his life, he lost a debate with Dorothy Sayers and decided from then on he would never engage in apologetics again and gave himself wholeheartedly to building worlds. Think about that. The space trilogy, Narnia, where would we be if Lewis just continued to focus on ideas rather than art? And of course, his best friend, my whole office is patterned after Tolkien and Lewis. I'm surrounded in this. I sit in this. But I wanted to just inspire you as I leave you. The tail end of this discussion, again, How Beauty Will Save the World by Winfield Bevins. Hey, be a Tolkien, be a C.S. Lewis. See what God's got inside of you to create. Go on now. Go build worlds. And we'll see you on the next time on the Church Planner Podcast.